Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. My good friend Mike Grimm at Minnesota. The Holiday Bowl last night in San Diego.
Leitner to pass. Lobs for the far side of the end zone. The ball is tipped to Minnesota. Touchdown, Shannon Brooks. It was tipped by a Cougar defender right to Brooks for the touchdown. It was an eyelash from an interception in the end zone, and Minnesota gets the touchdown.
Mike Grimm last night with the call on the Golden Gopher Radio Network. Yeah, big win for Minnesota. Everything they went through, they missed a couple of practices, skipped out on a couple of things. They were going to protest the game. They were going to boycott the game. Ended up playing the game, and they won the game last night in San Diego. All right. Penn State in the Rose Bowl on Monday, 5 o'clock, 3:30 airtime on News Radio 1070 WKOK. My longtime friend, my good friend, Lou Prado joins us here in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Lou, to Carol and you, happy holidays.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you, yeah, your family, and the audience, and Jason, everybody out there, all the sports fans.
Absolutely. Penn State will go by 747 out to the coast.
Oh, you can land 747s here now? I mean,
not here.
Oh, okay.
Out of Harrisburg. 1923. Okay. What kind of arduous trip was this? And not only that, but Penn State got the invitation very, very early in this process.
Well, let's talk about the trip first, and I'll go back to the invitation, because the invitation is really the better story. But the trip, actually, train travel was pretty good back then. You mean, people find it hard to believe, but Penn State traveled by train, you know, in the when they started football, they had to use train to go to Boston or play Harvard and, you know, and elsewhere. So it wasn't such a bad thing. They'd been to the West Coast in the 21 season, the last game of the 21 season. They went to Washington, first time ever were on the West Coast. But train travel was great back then. So there were 29 people in the party, 19 players, and the rest was party. And it took them, I think it was a six-day trip. I can't remember precisely. I should have brought my notes, but they got there on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And they worked out. They went to Chicago. Every time they stopped training, they'd work out. But on the way back, they toured Texas and they toured Chicago. But on the way out, they actually they stopped and went up to the Grand Canyon and toured the Grand Canyon. Once they got there by train, it was like a bowl, you know, like a typical bowl game. They were in Hollywood. They were wooden. They went to visit Hollywood set, you know, and they practiced. But some of them over practiced outside of practice, you might say, because the captain, Newt Spence, was benched because he was celebrating too much. And Joe Bedink, who was basically the star of the team, Joe became our great baseball coach, but he was an All-American guard, tougher than nails, and, you know, been both ways. He got injured in practice, so that sort of set the omen. But the omen may have been set when they got invited. The 1921 team was a great team. We call it the mystery team. Yeah. And there's a lot about it, but they were really great. And Penn State was riding under Bezdik, was riding a winning streak, an undefeated streak from 1919 through part of the 22 season. But the 21 team had a tie. But they were considered a mystery team of the country. Remember, back then you didn't have radio. Radio was just starting out, crystal sets. Which I'll tell you about involved the bowl game, but it was newspapers, the magazines, the print press, okay, and you relied on that, and you relied on train for travel, okay, you used to do that type of stuff. The Rose Bowl was not called the Rose Bowl in 1923. It was called the Tournament of Roses East West football game.
Right.
Started in 1902, as we know, with Michigan being the team, and he always invited a team from the East to play a team from the West. Well, that year, 1922. Bezdik had connections in the West Coast. Not only was he coached at Oregon and coached the Mare Island Marines during the World War One into the at the Rose at the tournament game, so called Rose Bowl. But also he was a baseball guy, was a baseball scout, West Coast scout, when Pirates hired him to be their manager, and that's where he came to be the Penn State coach. It's a, you know, it's, it may sound convoluted to people that, that listen to your audience that don't know about this story. But with his Rose Bowl connections, the team actually Bezdik got the official invitation from the Rose Bowl the Tournament of Roses committee that sponsored the game in the spring, and secretly accepted it, formally accepted it in August. So before the season started, they knew were going to California. Right. Now they had this unbeaten streak going, so they start the 22 season and they were rolling along early in the season on the eve of the Syracuse game, which was played at Yankee Stadium in New York, the Polo Grounds, which was played in New York. And on the eve of that game, the Collegian broke the story. It was the biweekly Collegian that they were invited to the game, and then they made it, they accepted. So there was a lot of hanky panky, might say, but it reminds you years later when Penn State got invited to the
Blockbuster Bowl,
the Blockbuster goal, '92. So before they got into the Big Ten, so there was what history does repeat itself. But here's what happened though with the team. The team they tied Syracuse, and then it was the first appearance of the Nittany Lion mascot. That's another story, but it's historic now on the field. And then they went down the next week, and they were supposed to beat Navy. They were favored to beat Navy in one of the biggest games ever. It was a Friday game at Exposition Park in Washington D.C. And dignitaries were there. A typical game. It was a big thing. And not only dignitaries, the president was supposed to be there, but wasn't. But John Heisman, the coach, was there, and all the big time coaches. And they lost. And from that point on, they lost, and they lost, and they lost. And so they were big time losers, and they went to the game. Well. The California was going to be the home representative. California had beaten USC in the first game played in that new Rose Bowl, and I'll tell you about that. But what happened was that they turned the bowl down, so that's how USC became the representative. Right. But it was the first game played in the stadium, which is now known as the Rose Bowl, where it is going to be played this year.
On that current patch of grass is the first time it was ever played there in 23.
Right, and the stadium was designed after the designer patterned it after the Yale Bowl, and so a newspaper guy, I forget his name right now, also did PR for the Tournament of Roses. He worked for the Pasadena News. He named the stadium the Rose Bowl, not the game. It was still the Rose Bowl. Right. So that became the Rose Bowl where they played. Rose Bowl Stadium. And the first game played in that was not this Rose Bowl game, the event, the Penn State and USC. Right. USC, that's where California had beaten USC. So that's all the setup of what happened getting to the game. But the game itself was even crazier in the pregame, because the Rose Bowl parade, they had to go watch the parade, and they went back to the hotel, and they took taxis. They probably went with a bus, maybe, or taxis. Mm. So they were going, the game was scheduled for 2:15, and because of all the traffic jams, they didn't have a police escort. The taxis taking the players, keep in mind, 26 men in a party, so they were traveling over people's yards and going down there and got there late and before the kickoff. They had to delay the kickoff, and Bezdik had already had a confrontation in previous confrontations with gloomy Gus Henderson, the coach of USC. So they almost got into a fist fight, and because Henderson thought that they planned this being late as a psychological ploy, and also because he wanted to stay out of the sun, because it did get very hot. Yeah. And it got very hot, and there were 40,000 people showed. It was less than capacity. Penn State scored first with a field goal, and from that point on, it was all USC. But one of the reasons why is, in one of the breaks, the freshman coach, who happened to be Bill Hess, the captain of the 1920 Penn State team, conferred with the quarterback. They told him what to expect out of Bezdik, and they got beaten 14-3. But they made money from it and went back, and they made the trip back, and it is our first game and first Rose Bowl game, first bowl game ever.
Hey, that's the 23 Rose, and again, it was not the smoothest of stories. Again, when you accept it in the spring.
Yeah, you get it in the spring. You know, it's like, I mean, remember that 90, the 92 team? That was one of the best teams they had, and they started out 5-0, and then they went down to that bowl game after getting beat by Miami. And it was just, they didn't want to be there.
No.
But this team wanted to be at that bowl game, the 1923 team.
Yeah, they wanted to be
19 there. Players?
Yeah, that's it.
19 players?
19 players. I mean, there'll be 19 players playing on defense. For goodness sakes, rotating.
And it wasn't until a few years later that they then changed it to the Rose Bowl game.
Right.
But there's one other interesting fact about it, that was the first time the Rose Bowl game was broadcast. But right. It's not officially on the broadcast list because the crystal sets were being used. There weren't many. They were experimenting with radio back then. So it was just a small audience in L.A. And Malcolm Moran, our old friend Malcolm Moran, who wrote a book similar to what I did called the Rose Bowl Vault, like my Penn State football vault, pointed out that it was 1927 that they officially broadcast the game by radio. But really, my research showed that there was a little broadcast and who did it or how it went. Not too many people were listening to him. But the other part of that game is that it finished in the almost darkness because the game started so late that they didn't have lights back then.
Right.
But people that go to the game this year, that's the same stadium, and you can look at the various pictures. Now they did some reconstruction inside and brought down the capacity. They brought it up at one point to plus 100,000.
It's over 100,000. When Penn State played there in 1995, there was over 100,000.
But they've had it. Maybe like, because that's also right now being used as the home field for
UCLA.
UCLA. So it's almost a home field for USC because they play there a lot.
Yeah, in fact, they played there. They played UCLA in the Rose Bowl in November. They're only 8 miles away. It's really not that far.
Yeah, but sometimes it takes you 8 years with that traffic.
Penn State taking a 747 might take less time to get there than USC.
They can parachute in, you know.
Exactly. When you went out there and took a good long look at it and then kind of compared your notes from days gone by, what was your thoughts on the setting, being in it, seeing in it after all the time you'd seen it on TV?
I know how the players are going to feel, okay? I mean, if you've never been there before in an event, you have to be there at least once. Actually, it was my third Rose Bowl. My wife Carol and I went to the, when we were in the Navy, I was in the Navy, but a bunch of the officers on the ship we went were Minnesota fans. Mm-hmm. And we went to see Minnesota play Washington in 1960.
Okay.
And sat in the streets, was a fan, you know, and got stuck in traffic and all that. But I don't remember too much about being enthralled by it all. It was when I went out there for the 95 game, and actually I went up to the stadium, was out there for a convention, Radio TV News convention, in October of 94, the week we beat Michigan in a famous game in 94, with Rich Eisen in my suite, almost a big Michigan fan, one of my students, and went out and I drove around the bowl game. They were having a flea market. The Rose Bowl, the flea market,
which they do all the time.
Right.
That's not uncommon.
Yeah,
they do that all the time there.
But unfortunately, my wife couldn't go to the bowl game. We were just fans back then. We lived in D.C. and went out there with my friend from my hometown friend Tom Lasky and his wife from Indiana, PA, former retired state cop, now lives in Altoona. And we went out there, and we were just fans, and it was just being in that environment. And Ira Miller, our good friend Ira Miller, who was then covering the 49ers for the San Francisco Chronicle, he had the parking pass and had the tailgate, and right underneath where that sign was, and all the Richie Lucas walked by, and Ernie Accorsi walked by, and the people that we knew from Penn State, people knew it was a great time to be there and be involved. And then in 2008, when we went out there, we were part of the media, and that was even more thrilling because it got into some of the back scene stuff.
Yeah.
And so, but if you're in the Rose Bowl, some people aren't going to be impressed. Some people aren't necessarily impressed visiting Beaver Stadium sometimes. Yeah. But you got to, if you're there, know the history and understand the history that is the place and to play in it. I mean, what kid when they're small and you think you're going to be able to play college football and want to play in a Rose Bowl?
Will Tiemann, who is the play-by-play voice for Michigan State basketball, and then he's the sideline and host for their football network. They played here in basketball And Will said, I've got this flight that's going to get me in. He says, it's going to be awfully close as to when I get there. And I said to him, I said, no, Will. I said, you've never been there, right? He says, no. I said, do me a favor. I said, no matter what time you get there and how rushed you feel, I said, during the first commercial break you have, take a moment and look at it. I said, look at the San Gabriels, look at the stadium, look at the setting. I said, and then you'll get a chance to really feel it. He made it there, walked into the Rose Bowl 20 minutes before kickoff. 20 minutes. All right. Gets in there, starts his segment right before kickoff. He said, he texted me from the game. He said, Steve, I took the 60 seconds to look around. He said, best advice I ever got.
Curly, is that when if the weather's right, if the
weather's
perfect,
right,
you got those mountains. It's just it is great, and there's no smog much anymore around it. But it's but people that are going better be ready. It can be very cold. They're going to go to the parade too.
Yeah,
5 or 6 o'clock in the morning out there, and 7 o'clock when it starts. Mm-hmm. It could be cold, and it could be very warm, and it gets cold at night too. The other thing I found very interesting, having been there,
the game ends in the evening too. The lights are on, so remember the game ends at night, so it's going to get chilly at that.
And the other thing that's unusual is people, they throw you out. They force you to leave the parking. They want you out of there. They clear their. Yeah. I mean it's there's other, you know, there are other stadiums in the Big Ten that sometimes do that. We don't at Penn State.
Right.
But if you're on, I mean, get out of here. It's time for you to go. You know, you've hung around now. You have your 2 hours tailgate, and now go.
Right. And by the way, on two sides, the Rose Bowl is surrounded by a golf course. So don't be surprised by that either. It's on the west side, the press box side, and it's on the north side as well. Also be prepared. There'll be a flyover before the game. The Penn State Blue Band will play the national anthem. Because Penn State is the higher-ranked team. So because that, Penn State, the Blue Band, plays the national anthem. It'll be a B-52, I believe. They'll do a flyover for the game.
That's great. That's great. Pete Carroll isn't coaching Southern Cal, is he?
No.
Good, because of what happened in that 208 game. Pete Carroll's not one of my favorite people. That's going to that 208, I mean, that second quarter just went like that. And a lot of reasons, we don't have to go into the game, but what I found the worst was the lack of class and of allowing those players to get stomped around and the arrogant and they should have been penalized and they weren't. And
you know what's interesting is that the day before, there were the teams had to go downtown, and so I went downtown, and obviously Joe was there, the Penn State team was there. At the downtown Marriott, and then I had to exit, and the USC team came in, and of course with Pete Carroll, and I walked, we kind of passed each other in the hallway. The one thing about that team is they walked in like they knew they were darn good. They walked in like they owned the place.
Well, they did,
and they weren't wrong. But you know what's interesting about this game is that I've heard over and over and over again that USC is really, really, really good. And they are. They are really, really, really good. What I haven't heard is what people should understand. And I made this statement on a talk show in San Diego earlier this week. I said, what all of you don't realize? It's Penn State's really, really, really good. I said, enjoy the game.
Yeah, too many people, including that coach at the western part of the state, who said, the game wasn't close, which was a bunch of baloney. We almost beat the Panthers, and that game at Michigan, people seemed to, they didn't see it. They didn't see what happened. In fact, I'm just reading the article that Teddy Greenstein did about the officiating in the Big Ten. It's a pretty good article.
Well, I know because he was interviewing Bill Corella outside our booth at the Big Ten Championship game, so I knew Teddy was going to do something.
I've talked to Corella in the past doing a story about officiating.
And Bill is a great guy to talk to.
But it was interesting in that talking about that game too, of how they admitted that they blew it when they threw our linebacker,
Smith,
out of the game for targeting, and that hurt it even more. And people don't realize how much that had effect. Now I'm not saying Michigan wouldn't have won because that's totally
it was their day.
It was their day, but the score looked. Was a lot worse than it could have been if we'd had a little
All I know is that the last 9 weeks were really special. So that's That's what I'm banking on right now.
Well, I saw a piece yesterday now, that these two linebackers for USC, that the LA Times had a piece that they're really targeting on hitting our quarterback behind the line. I mean, to sack him behind the line. Mm-hmm. I'm anxious to see what happens there because, it's a chess game, we know. But I have to tell you, Stephen, all the time I've been watching college football, I've never seen a quarterback like McSorley. I mean, I've seen runs with more talent, mm-hmm. overall. Sure. I've seen them as college players. I've seen the Staubachs I'm talking about as a college player at their prime. But I've never seen it maybe you have. You had that. Think about it. You can go to the line of scrimmage and not cross it and find the open receiver downfield because he's looking three or four times and avoiding it. I don't know how he does it.
He has an instinct and a feel for the game that's rare. And Penn State's lucky to have him.
I mean, so I think people are going to be. As I say, I'm interested to see what USC does to stop him because I'm sure that Moorhead and Franklin and mm-hmm. and Lime, the offensive coordinator,
Lime Grover,
they're all doing their plan because he's going to get stopped a couple times. Sure. But I said, McSorley showed that in a way which we didn't understand at the Tax Slayer Bowl last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't realize what we were seeing. I mean, we're all enamored with Hack, which, for a lot of good reasons.
Sure.
And McSorley came in there, and all of a sudden, what? We're back in this game.
Yeah.
I mean, and, the Pitt game could have gone either way. This should be a great game, and I think that a lot of people in the media believe that too. Now, we thought the 2-8 game was going to be a pretty good game, and it wasn't. But we also remember Joe was coaching from the box, and there were a lot of different things that made that thing different.
My pleasure. Great to have you.
I'll be listening to you to see what other you come up from your encyclopedic mind.
Lou, thanks. Lou Prado joining us today in the Sunbury Motors studio. News coming up next on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hubbell's Wharf. Great to have you with us today. As we do get ready for the Rose Bowl on Monday. And the question I've been asked over and over by various entities as I've been guests on shows and so forth is, did you believe they'd be here? Now, look, you don't sit there in September and you're 2-2 and think, hey, great, let's go to the Rose Bowl. And, you just don't think that. But you also, when you do this job, you do get yourself into the same kind of mindset that coaches get criticized for. And when they start talking about the one game at a time deal, well, that's what it comes down to. Because in what I do, I literally get ready for
one game at a time. I don't sit there the week of the Minnesota game and then but I get ready for the Ohio State game. I don't sit there getting ready for Minnesota, get ready for Ohio State. I don't do anything on the Ohio State game until the week of the Ohio State game. It doesn't mean in May that I don't do an entire workup on Ohio State, because I do. I do a workup on all 41 opponents that I see during the course of a year between football and basketball. I do a workup on all of them. That way, when I get to the week of the game, I've done a lot of the dirty work. Height, weight, class, hometown, potential starters. Now you make some changes. Some freshmen may start playing. Guy gets hurt. Somebody beats somebody else out. So you make some changes on the chart and so forth. That's what you do. But I do not sit there the week of the Minnesota game, and while everybody's thinking, oh boy, Ohio State's in 2 weeks, I can't think that way. I can't think that way. And and coaches get criticized with this one game at a time mentality. Well, I don't coach, I don't play, but I do broadcast, and I know that I can only broadcast the game in front of me. Now, the Rose Bowl is an easy game to get ready for. I mean, there's no other game after this. I mean, the next football game I'll do after this will be the Blue-White game on April 22nd. But as soon as I'm done with the Rose Bowl, I'm going to kick right into gear, and I've got to make sure I'm ready for the Michigan game on Wednesday night. So, Saeed Blacknall and Manny Bowen are the two players, by the way, that will not be playing in the Rose Bowl. They've been suspended due to team rules. They will not play in the Rose Bowl. And if you're going to pick the guy that's going to play for him, it's going to be Koa Farmer. Blacknall also suspended. He had a great Big Ten championship game. Career high, 155 yards receiving, two touchdowns. Averaged over 20 yards a catch this year. DeAndre Tompkins, as he did early in the year, is going to be the guy that will replace him at wide receiver. Okay. So that's how it's going to play out. So it's going to be Koa Farmer. Manny Bowen's out. Saeed Blacknall is out. Violation of team rules going into this one. Meanwhile, one USC, Olajuwon Tucker, who's their backup outside linebacker who plays a lot, academic issues, will not play in the Rose Bowl. And they had a third-string defensive lineman also because of academic issues out. So it's going to be Manny Bowen, Saeed Blacknall. They will miss the Rose Bowl. All right? So that part at least is now confirmed. 800-795-9565. It's 800-795-9565. And again, this is James Franklin from day one has put rules into place. And guess what? You don't follow the rules, you don't play. He does not bend the rules. He doesn't do it. He doesn't do it. Hey, do you think Curtis Cothran could have helped in the opening month of the season? Right? I mean, Curtis Cothran could help in the opening month of the season, but he was suspended for the opening month. Garrett Sickles, you know, could have played the entire game against Ohio State. So it has never mattered to James Franklin how big the game is perceived to be. He has rules, and you don't play. It's as simple as that. He has rules. You violate the team rules. He's not going to bend it for you. Well, it's a big game. We could probably use you, so you know we'll suspend you for a quarter. Nope. He's always done this. He has always done this. He's been very consistent about it. It is one of the many, many things I have quietly respected about him. And when I saw how he handled things in the first year and then a little bit into the next year, It's one thing about him I noticed right away is that he has standards, and standards are really important to him. And because standards are really important to him, he will not sacrifice standards to win a football game. Well, I need to win this game, so I'll just suspend him for a couple series. Violate a rule, you're out. Ohio State game. Ohio State, big, huge game, Garrett Sickles, without question, one of Penn State's 10 best players. Without question, one of the 10 best players that the Nittany Lions have. You can maybe argue he's probably one of the six or seven best players Penn State has. And guess what? Violated team rule. First half of the game, doesn't play. Second half, he plays out of his mind. But he could have made a difference in the first half of the game. But it didn't matter. Playing Ohio State, he's out the first half of the game. You know, Curtis Cothran. We all knew Curtis Cothran could really. That defensive line got a lead. You notice how much better the defensive line got better as a domino when Curtis Cothran started playing? But again, violated team rule, didn't play. Cy Blacknell, Manny Bowen, violated team rule, can't play the Rose Bowl. If you have a program with long-term goals to it, you have to have standards. Joe Paterno had standards. Bill O'Brien had standards. I think Sean Oakman ended up at Baylor. Yeah. Why did Joe Jerovicius not play in the Citrus Bowl? Standards. And the players know the deal going in. Look, and Manny Bowen and Cy Blacknell are good guys, okay? But things happen. Everybody makes mistakes. And he has a standard. Okay. There's your standard. Well, you know what? DeAndre Tompkins showed me all season long. Yeah, he's a player. He's a threat. All season. I mean, all season long, he showed that. So he'll step in and he'll play. And then the door will be open for Juwan Johnson to get into the act a little bit, and Urban Charles to get into the act a little bit. But Tompkins is really, really good. And Tompkins is a big player guy. He's going to be tough for USC anyway. Next part is Manny Bowen. Manny Bowen got better and better and better. I mean, the area where he helped make Penn State better defensively is that you could see early in the year Naeem Wortman-White, when he was playing, I mean, was using his brain more so than his legs because Naeem is really, really smart. But he was dragging that leg around. I know Jack and I were wondering, gee, I wonder how long it's going to be before that thing really is quite right for him, because you could see his lateral movement wasn't right. And then he got hurt, unfortunately, which really, of course, stunk for him. And it was a big loss. Well, then it opened the door for Manny Bowen to start playing. And Manny got off to kind of a shaky start. And then as the season got on, he got better and better and better. And I'll tell you, the area where he made Penn State really good was that his quickness made a big, big difference. Well, guess what? That's Coa Farmers game. Coa Farmers game is about speed. And you don't think he's not going to be sky high to start in the Rose Bowl? He's from Lakeview Terrace, for goodness sakes. I mean, Lakeview Terrace. I mean, this guy is excited beyond words to get the start in the Rose Bowl. How about that? So, Jason Kabinda, by the way, returning for his senior season, as will Mike Gesicki. So there's the story. People have been wondering which players. We can tell you now which players they are. And it is Cy Blacknell, and it is Manny Bowen. Okay? So they're out of the game. And expect Koa Farmer to step in for Manny. And expect DeAndre Tompkins to step in for Blacknall. Okay? It's we told you as soon as we got the, any kind of inclination as to what it was, we'd pass it along to you. Well, we got it. There it is. Okay? So there you are. It was confirmed out in California. I'm not going to be there till Saturday late morning. Late morning. So.
Good morning, Airlift.
All right. Some snow moving into the area tonight, so be careful. So that California trip looked better and better. Okay, back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors.
All right, great to have you with us on the show. Again, the story out on the coast is Manny Bowen and Saeed Blacknall will be suspended for the Rose Bowl. Expect DeAndre Tompkins to step up at that wideout spot for Blacknall, as he did earlier in the year when Saeed was hurt. And expect Koa Farmer to step up for Penn State at the linebacking spot. And Koa has a little bit of speed off that edge that has been difficult for teams to handle this year. I mean, he's I'd said when he had made the move from safety to outside linebacker, and then, of course, Penn State was in all of that trouble with linebackers getting hurt. They had seven injured at one point. I'd made the point in the pregame show and talking with Jack. I said, look, when Koa made the move the first time, he really, really, really had trouble with the hand fighting and things like that. Okay? I mean, he had a lot of trouble with it. And I told Jack that the key for him, I'm telling Jack, but I mean, I said the key for Farmer is that when you get into something like this, you have to take your strengths and use your strengths. In other words, you're big, I'm small. I'm quick and nimble, you're not. Right? You're big and you're strong, that's your strength. But I'm quick and nimble, right? And you're not. Okay? So now I've got to be able to use quick and nimble and make it work for me and turn my strength into your minus. Well, that's what Koa Farmer has done this year. He has taken his strength, speed, and quickness, and he has been crushing people off the edge this year with his blitz packages. Plus, he's played safety, so he knows how to play the pass. So it's not as if, this is a big minus. And the same thing with, because look, Bowen's a good player. I mean, don't get me wrong. Bowen is really, really good. I mean, he's going to continue to grow and be a really good linebacker here, and he's going to be a loss. But because Farmer has played so much, that's the important part here. He's played so much, and now he's utilizing his strengths that the drop-off is not massive or dramatic. Same thing with Tompkins and Blacknall. The drop-off is not massive or dramatic with Saeed Blacknall to DeAndre Tompkins, as we watched all year. Now, Tompkins is not as big a receiver as Blacknall is, but he has an ability to go up and get the ball at the high point. He has great speed. He uses his speed well, and he's become a really good deep threat. Obviously, Blacknall's coming off the game of his career. Blacknall's coming off the best game of his career, that fabulous performance he turned in against Wisconsin with 155 yards and two touchdowns, a critical touchdown at the end of the first half. And the critical touchdown to open up the second half. Yeah, that's big. So, that's the story out on the coast. So expect Tompkins for Blacknall, expect Farmer for Bowen, and you go from there. Now the key is who backs up Farmer. The last time they did this, Jarvis Miller was the backup. And Jarvis did get into the game. I think it was against, I want to say Maryland, Jarvis got into the game, as a matter of fact, at linebacker.
And we pointed it out at that time. So.
Any key matchups you're looking at, Steve?
Oh, I think they all are at this point. I think you've got to be able to keep some control over Darnold at quarterback. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He moves, for a big man, he moves really well. I mean, I think that's going to be one of the key things right there because of how well Darnold moves. I mean, he's not Fran Tarkenton. He's not a scrambler getting away, but he's nimble. He moves, he gets out of the way, he creates a little better passing lane for himself. I like him. He's got pro size. I think he's got pro potential. He can throw the deep ball pretty well, and he's accurate throwing the ball. The funny thing is about USC, though, is that Juju Smith-Schuster, his numbers in terms of yards per catch, he had a really good year. But his yards per catch numbers are down from his first 2 years with Cody Kessler quarterback because I think they're just running so many shorter routes, crossing routes. Juju's averaging about, what is he averaging, 12.7 yards a catch? He's averaging 5.7 yards after the catch, which means his, the average depth he's catching the ball is 7 yards. See what I mean? So that's... there's a couple things. I think containing McSorley is going to be tough. The nose tackle for USC is really, really good. The transfer out of Utah, who went on that Mormon mission and is 25 years old. But he's really good for like 3 or 4 plays in a row, and then that's it. You know, we talk about what the term of the year is. He's got a great motor. Well, this guy's a really good player who does not have a great motor. I mean, all of a sudden you watch him on the 4th or 5th play of a series, and you can tell the tank is empty. Linebackers are good, not great. Cameron Smith's pretty good. Porter Gustin's pretty good. Jackson is really good at the corner, but the last 3 games they played against Washington, UCLA, and Notre Dame, he was beat a few times. But I'll say this, Ross from Washington's really good.